Deot, and we're in Perek Zayin Halacha Dalad, Chapter 7, the fourth Halacha. I want you to know that of all the issues of the Rambam's character development, and the issue of, do you need a copy back there? Yeah, right? And specifically the issue of Lashon Hara, okay? This is the one that's most difficult. In other words, there's two pieces to Lashon Hara. One is, you know, not doing it. The other is knowing that you're doing it. And those are two interrelated but very significantly different pieces. Because very often people speak and they don't realize that the speech or the conversation or the dialogue is problematic. And of all the topics, now remember, just to remind you, because we're going to get into terms here, we said that there are three issues. There's rechilut, gossip. There's lashon hara. We'll call that slander. Anybody remember the third? Very good, motzi shemra. Okay, so we said that rechilut is where I gossip innocently about a person. I'm not saying anything bad. It's true, and it could even be something nice. Okay, then the second stage is lashon hara. I'm saying something bad about a person. Could also be true. And the third is I'm saying something bad about a person that isn't true. Now, we can agree on a certain level that the third motzi shemra is the worst of the three. To say something about someone that's negative, and no, it's not even true, okay? That would seem to be the most insidious, the worst sort of way that you can speak about your fellow human being. I'm not always sure that that's true. Sometimes saying, you know, when you say something about someone that's not true, at least there's the possibility someone will find out it's not true and rectify it on some level. When you say something bad about a person that's true, there's nothing you can do about it. You set it up, okay? Rechilut, we would think, is just more innocent. And the problem with rechilut, with gossip, is that it leads to bad things. But it, in and of itself, is not problematic. That's how most people look at rechilut. This is a whole different level. Now we're going to talk about something that's avak lashon hara. Okay? It's not really gossip. It's the type of conversation that seems so innocent, but it leads to slander. It leads to lashon hara. Okay? V'yesh dvarim shehein avak lashon hara. There are things that are sort of, literally means the dust of Lashon Hara. In other words, it in and of itself is not Lashon Hara. Now, I'll tell you the greatest thing, and I'll give you an example. Okay, let's look at the example. Ketzat, how does this work? Mi omar leploni, shiye kamo tshuata. Somebody should tell, I don't know, somebody should tell Shlomo that he should keep doing what he's doing. What am I automatically implying?
He's doing something good.
Well, let's say he's doing something good. Let's say I see Shlomo. Let's say I see Shlomo. Shlomo says, I don't know, I'm going to clean up the mess after lunch. And I say, boy, someone should tell Shlomo he should keep doing that. He should keep it up. So what have I implied?
That he wasn't doing before.
Right? And if it's said in the right way or the wrong way, depending on your perspective, then someone sitting there is automatically going to think, well, that's interesting. Like, you wouldn't sit here and say, wow, look at Rav Noam. He's learning. He just wouldn't say that. Like, that should be a given. Right? But if I said about one of you guys, Rav Noam, check it out. He's sitting and learning Gemara. So on the one hand, that's one of the things. On the other hand, you're implying that normally he doesn't learn Gemara. Right? Are you allowed to do that? Very dangerous. I want you to know, if I could institute in schools, and I don't think any type of school is exempt from this, but I'm specifically thinking in Jewish education. If I could institute in schools something that teachers should do on a regular basis, it would be to study the halachas of Lashon Hara. The teachers. Right? It's so easy to fall into this. It's so easy as a teacher. You know, and you're doing it for the welfare of your students, and you're concerned about them, and you're struggling, you know. Someone will ask me an innocent question. How was Shabbos? How did so-and-so like Shabbos? Just be very careful. Because you can start to speak in such a way and talk about a boy, and the other person is thinking, oh, well, he's saying that because, very dangerous. You can destroy a person in a moment, and you don't even realize you did it. He's just saying something nice. You don't even realize you did it. You know? There's a boy who wants to, I don't know, what's a good, somebody says, I wish we had a second week of yeshiva, right? It's an innocent line. And then I turn to Daniel and I say, did you hear Carl? Carl said, I wish we had a second week in yeshiva. I've just changed the whole nature of conversation. You know? And imagine that, et cetera. Okay, that's what the Rambam's talking about here. Right? And I want you to know, you know, it's interesting. I once, when I first got to Gush, when I first went to yeshiva, so it was a little overwhelming. Like, we went for a visit to Gush, you saw it's a big base medrash, whatever. We were there really sort of in a more summertime zman. But if you go to Gush in like Elul zman, you know, there's like 600, 700, 800 guys that sing the base medrash, and they learn out loud. I mean, that's how you learn. A lot of people learn out loud. You could hear that there were people learning out loud, whatever. And it's like a roar. And on the one hand, you know, I was thinking about this over Shabbat, because, right, there was another yeshiva there, Shalavim was there, and we were in the same place. We were definitely having different experiences. And I was thinking about, on the one hand, now there you go, now we're going to get into trouble, right? So, but it's good you think that, right? You should always think that what you do is better, right? But what they do is wonderful. Anyway, so I was thinking that by definition, if you have 60, 70 boys, however many boys they had, you have to have a different experience. You just have to. You can't do the same things with 70 boys you can do with 20. Lera'a l'tov. In other words, their advantage is, listen, you know, you want to do your own mincha, and you have 70 guys. There's a power to having 70, 80 people in a mincha. It's a different experience. First of all, you can start exactly on time, because 10 people are going to be there on time, right? And you do a niggun. So you sing a niggun with 70, 80 guys. You're going to have 20 good voices, you know? 20 guys, it's a risk, you know, whatever it is. On the other hand, there's certain things you can't do. Like, I don't think they could have used that dining room that we were using. And they wouldn't have fit. You know, we went up on the Mitzvah, we were looking out for Maariv, overlooking the stars. They couldn't do that. You can't do that. I won't do that with 80 people. If this yeshiva ever grows, I hope it never does. I wouldn't. You couldn't do that. It'd be dangerous. Somebody fall in the pit there. Who knows what would happen, right? So you have different experiences. And I remember that one of the experiences that's so different is that there's a noise to the Beis Medrash. Like, I would sometimes, remember we went into the library and I showed you the picture of Danny Majitz, my friend who was killed in action. And I told you, I used to sit down there sometimes. When did I used to sit there? You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Remember this, right? So when did I used to sit down there in the library? I used to go there sometimes because the noise would get so intense. There's so much yelling and screaming. What are you talking about? Tosas says this, Rashi says. You just can't think. So I would go down the library, be quiet. You know, you saw this and people sitting in there, right? And it's like, you know, sort of a quiet zone. So I once asked one of the rabbeim there. I understand. Like, I understand the two guys are debating a topic, and they're talking to each other. What's all the yelling? Why is it that people sit and learn Gemara, and they learn it out loud? Right? So Rabbi Lezer says like this, Rabbi Akiva says like that. What do you basically do? He told me a brilliant answer. He said, you know, if you could get used to talking out loud and learning, every minute that you spend talking out loud and learning, you know with absolute certainty you're not speaking Lashon Hara. Any other time, you can't be sure. Now, this was said to me, I won't say his name, because just in case you think something and it becomes Lashon Hara, but this was said to me by one of the rebbeim there, who's just a mountain of Torah. And I said, is that why you learn out loud? He said, absolutely. And he was totally serious. He said, whenever he finds himself in a place and he's not sure that the conversation he's going to have is going to be productive, so he does some learning. Because if you do some learning, so don't get me wrong, you have to be careful with this. You know, you walk into your college interview, and, you know, he's sort of, you know, looking at his paper for a minute. You're just saying, maybe it's like, Karnish, maybe I have him. You have to find a balance. Like, I don't know if I would do it then, right? But there is something to be said to the fact that we become sensitive. Like I said last week, Hashem Svatai Tiftach. To become sensitive to everything that comes out of your mouth. You know, just this morning we had a birthright group, you know, one of the Israelite groups. And I was teaching them. And, you know, got into a whole discussion about, you know, purpose and meaning and mission and all these types of things. And one of the students there, like at the end, we opened up the floor. One of the students said, well, so what's the purpose of Judaism? It's a good question, right? So I think that that's not just a singular question. That's a question with every aspect of your mahut, of your essence. What's the purpose of my hands? Why did God give me ears? What's the purpose of my mouth? As I'm about to say something, do I have the ability to consider, what's the purpose of this sentence? Is there a libriot? Is there a good purpose to it? Is good going to come out of this conversation? Am I having this conversation for a good reason? So avak lashon hara is very, very dangerous. Oshi omar shitku miploni. Eni rotze lo dia ma'era u'me'aya. You know, somebody says, how's Josh doing? And I say, Josh, well, you know what? I don't want to talk about it. What kind of thing is that to say? I didn't say anything bad. I just said, I don't want to talk about it. That's not true. Because I just imply that there's something to talk about. So either somebody's going to think there's something negative I just don't know, or he's going to start digging. That's avak lashon hara. We do this all the time. By the way, can you do avak lashon hara, the dust of lashon hara, without saying a word? Uh-huh. Give me an example. Yeah, right? Somebody says, how's Levi doing? I say, let's study the Rambam. We do that all the time. We do that. Avak Lashon Hara. You're over, according to the Chafetz Chaim, you know how many different transgressions you're over? You do this. I want you to know, if every student came out of a writer, and no one put on tefillin, and no one was shomer shabbos, none of this, but everybody here learned, understood, and practiced the halachot of Lashon Hara from start to finish, according to no less than the Chafetz Chaim, you would be a greater vehicle for bringing peace to the world than if you learned all day and was shomer shabbos, but you didn't care about Lashon Hara. That's how serious this stuff is, mind-boggling. That's why this is the pinnacle of Hilchot Deor in the Rambam. The Rambam says, before we move on, before we study, now what's the next set of halachos in the Rambam, by the way?
Talmud Torah.
Can you imagine that? He puts this before the halachos of Talmud Torah. Before knowing whether you have to learn Torah or when you have to learn Torah, he says, first know when you have to speak Lashon Hara.
Can I?
Yeah, sure.
I understand what you're saying and everything, but how does one socialize, really? What do you talk about?
I want you to know, it's a good question. There's a famous story they tell, like, how do you socialize if you can't speak Lashon Hara, you know? There goes Jack, what a dull boy, you know, what's he going to do, right? They actually, if you, you can do a degree in the Institute for Lashon Hara, at the end they give you a muzzle. You just walk around, you know. But I'll tell you a story. They tell a story about the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim was the paradigm, great Torah scholar. He made this his mission in life. He published a sefer called Tzor Lashon Hara, which was basically all the laws of speech and Lashon Hara and whatever, right? And he wrote it anonymously, which I thought was very clever. Now, he doesn't need my approbation, but because if you write your name in there, then people start talking about you. So you're giving them food for, he thinks he's a big Lashon Hara, right? So you create Lashon Hara. So we only found out who he was because when he wrote the Mishnah Berurah, which is a series on Orach Chaim and Halacha and whatever, then he felt he had to put his name down because then people would have questions. They would find mistakes and they would maybe mistakes in Halacha. So he became known. So they tell a story about him, and he was pretty much one of the undisputed Gedolei Hador, one of the greats of his generation. He lived in Radin for most of his life, in Poland, and he died in 1932, I believe, just before the Holocaust really broke. Almost as though Hashem wanted to be mezakeh him, that he should have the merit not to see that pain. He actually died in Shul on Yom Kippur. He got his aliyah for the Torah. He made it to the Sefer Torah. He was able to get an aliyah. He went back to his chair. He sat down. He closed his eyes, and he was nifter. In Shul and Yom Kippur. That just doesn't happen to most people. You know what I mean? Way up there. So they say about the Chafetz Chaim, and you needed to hear that so you understand the story. So the Chafetz Chaim was once on one of his trips, and he went to an inn, and he wasn't expected there. Like, I guess the journey, the wagon got stuck. I don't know, whatever it was. He goes to this inn, and the innkeeper didn't recognize who the Chafetz Chaim was. So you know there are different tables, right? There's just like a restaurant. You know, you have the select table, the window table, the table that's right by the, you know, where the waiters come in and out. So they put him at the kind of back table, and he was sitting there with all the balei agalos, with all the horse wagon drivers, right? So the wagon drivers, they're not sitting talking back in Marba Ben Sia, right? They're wagon driver talk, right? So Nebuch the Chafetz Chaim, he's sitting there, and he's stuck there for Shabbos, all they're talking about is horses. You know, the thoroughbreds, and then this bread, and how, and fix the wagon, whatever, Nebuch. So at the end of Shabbos, a couple of people came to the inn, they saw the Chafetz Chaim, and they started making a big fuss, the Chafetz Chaim. All of a sudden, the innkeeper understood who was sitting in his inn. And he felt terrible. He had put the Chafetz Chaim with the horse, with the wagon drivers. So the Chafetz Chaim thanked him so much. He said, you don't understand, this was amazing. He said, all Shabbos, all I heard was talk about horses. Nobody talked about Lashon Hara. There was no Lashon Hara. All Shabbos. So I always thought, you know, if wagon drivers can find a way to spend the whole Shabbos and talk without... And I'll tell you something interesting. You know, when you're sitting at a table, so in the army, they call this chizbatim, like where you're joking. You know, you're kidding around. There's two types of laughter. There's laughter where you're laughing at people, and there's laughter where you're laughing with people. Laughing at people is much easier. It's much easier to come up with a good line. You know, every once in a while, I remember once, I vividly remember this, because I was studying the laws of Lashon Hara in Gush, and I had a friend, he was the king of the one-liners, and we used to chade one-liners. And I had this line, it was like, you know how like you're sitting at the table, all the guys there, you got this line, you know it's going to kill everybody. Right? It feels good, like you said, the line like goes nuts, right? But I realized it was a real zing. And I wasn't sure if the guy would take it personally or not, so I let it go. And it was like painful to let it go, because I knew it was such a great line, but I had to let it go, right? And I thought about that a lot. If the only way that you can laugh is to laugh at someone, it's not really worth laughing, right? So I do think it's possible. I think it should be painful. on a certain level. Like when we sit in the teacher's meeting and we want to have a discussion, we're trying to figure out how to help us. Maybe there's a student who's having a tough time. I don't know, he's depressed. And his mother calls us up and says he's depressed because it was his birthday and nobody knew his birthday. I don't know, whatever it could be. So you want to talk to his Rebbe. You want to have a discussion. How do you have that discussion to make sure that you're only speaking about the boy in question without denigrating him in any way? Very, very difficult. Right? But at the very least, by the way, you know what the first stage of Lashon Hara is? Of fixing it? It's like a guy who smokes cigarettes. So you get a guy who smokes cigarettes. He grew up in, I don't know, Senegal. And maybe in Senegal or Nepal, I don't know, they don't have a big nicotine tobacco awareness thing. Afghanistan, right? So he's smoking cigarettes, but he goes out every day and he's like walking through minefields. He's a Taliban fighter, I don't know. He's not really thinking about nicotine addiction. He's just smoking a cigarette. Then he goes to university in America and all of a sudden he discovers that it's an issue. He's still chain smoking, but now he knows it's an issue. So the first stage is to just be sensitive. Like if you're not ready to stop Lashon Hara, at least be at the point where you realize you just said Lashon Hara. Right? Hakarat HaChet. That's the first stage of the Rambam Nechos Tshuva, right? Recognizing this mistake. What's the next stage? We did this Nechos Tshuva. Charata. Do you regret it? Does it bother you? Speaking Lashon Hara. Like, most people don't even know they're speaking. Certainly Avak Lashon Hara. Then you get people, they know it's wrong, but it's so much fun. So they just do it. Then you get people who realize it's wrong, and they struggle with it, and that's a good stage. And then you could start to practice it. They started a mif'al in the neighborhood that I was in when I was a kid. They would have an hour, a Lashon Hara free hour. Right? Like you would have 1 hour in the day, they would do it on Shabbat, and the rabbi would announce, you know, it's 10 o'clock, we're having our Lashon Hara free hour. Everybody should try in the shul not speak Lashon Hara just for this hour. Now, if you can't go 1 hour without Lashon Hara, then you know you're addicted to Lashon Hara. Right? Because anything you can't go without for an hour means you have an addiction. And if you can, so now you just discovered you can go for an hour. So you can go for 2 hours. You want to say something?
Well, I mean, like the process of fixing that, where you can see, like in the Chumash, like in Nachafa, the first thing you should probably do is get out of the environment of, like, if you're like addicted to cigarettes and you're walking to Senegal, and that kind of environment enhances your chain smoking, then you should get out of the environment. Or
it's definitely
an environment of Lashon Hara. There's a bunch of guys like speaking Lashon Hara in like the dining room, you know, sitting in another whatever it is.
Listen, there's no doubt that sometimes part of the solution is to change your environment, to move yourself from the environment, whatever it might be. I agree with that. But there's just as many instances where you can't remove yourself from the environment. Suppose you're engaged, right? Or you're about to get engaged. You met a girl, you love her, she's amazing, and they invite you for Shabbat. And you go there for Shabbat, and these are your new in-laws. And they're sitting at the table talking Lashon Hara. And you're about to propose to their daughter, but you wouldn't do it without meeting the family, which I think is a good thing. And now you're, what are you going to say? Oh, Lashon Hara! Like, you know, you can't do that, right? So how do you deal with that? So what I'm saying is, right, what I'm saying is, the first stage is that you be able to say, by the way, you got to put this all, you know, one of the challenges I think people have when they come into the year in Yeshiva is it's very easy to put things in their boxes. But you got to take all the boxes and you got to put them together. It's a big puzzle. So for example, remember we once had a discussion about how easy it is to become judgmental. You shouldn't be judgmental. You can judge an action, but you shouldn't judge a person. Remember we had that discussion, right? So I wouldn't sit at the table and start thinking, look at these pigs, they're talking Lashon Hara. Like, Chas v'Shalom, like, how do you know this person? Like, could be a very fine human being. Maybe he never learned the Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is a difficult chet. But you can at least get to the stage where you say, you know what? It's interesting. I just came from Yeshiva, and I'm working on Lashon Hara. Now I see how easy it is to sit at the table and speak Lashon Hara. I got to think about that. That's already a level to be sensitive to it. Then you can ask yourself, like I told you that story about Tversky. You know, somebody said this the other day. Let's talk about more pleasant things. You know, can you steer the conversation? Can you find some loophole to pull everybody out of Lashon Hara without anybody feeling that you're God's gift to Judaism and rabbinics? You know what I mean? That's a balance. Right? Very dangerous.
When you say to someone, when you reply to someone, thank you, the other guy on the other side thinks you're saying, yeah, thank you, you know, like, thanks a lot.
Yeah, there's two interesting things about email. One is, if it used to be that you spoke Lashon Hara and you never knew where it spread, but you had some imagination in your mind that you realized you said something about it, that you could go catch the 2-3 people that were talking about it that hour, well, once you get to computers and email, it's done.
Right.
Like, you have to be so careful when you put stuff out there on Facebook for a lot of different reasons, but Lashon Hara is definitely one of them. Because you can destroy a person, and the person never realizes You can find out things about yourself that other people are writing that just aren't true. But they have a way of spreading, you know? Very dangerous. A lot of, by the way, Benon L'Chaver issues, you know, interpersonal challenges that have to do with email. For example, when you write someone an email and you mean just to critique them very lightly. So if you're saying it in person, you could say it with a smile, you could say it with a pat, you know, and just lightly, and the person doesn't even realize that he's being critiqued or whatever it might be, right? Okay? But you can't do this on an email. And you can't smile on an email. So sometimes you get people that are really offended. And you have no idea they're offended. You're so careful that that's true. Right?
Thank you so much. I hope next year I can come. I don't know what your age will be.
No problem. With pleasure. With pleasure. Very nice to meet you.
Cool
too.
Thank you.
Be well. No problem.
Say no, you can smile on an email. Colon.
Right, I know. It's not the same. And you know what the worst is? If somebody, I used to get this email. There's a woman, actually a mother of a parent. And she's once sent me this email and said, by the way, what is J? That's what she wrote. Okay. So I think, like, J. So I wrote her back, I don't know, is this a riddle? What's J? She said, no, all the time I find in your emails that I see J. Turns out that in her computer, for some reason, every time I do that colon, you know, parentheses, which is a smile, in her program, for whatever, it turns out it's J. I don't know why. So now I know what a J is. I tried to figure this out. I couldn't figure this out. Took me forever to figure it out. I'll spare you the details. So, yeah. But anyway, so you never know, right? V'chola misaper. Now, this is, by the way, even more challenging. This is even more challenging. Listen to this. V'chola misaper. B'tovat chavero b'fnei sonav. And if you tell, if you're speaking, you know, nicely about someone, right? But in front of his enemies. Like, let's say, chas v'shalom, that I know, that Daniel and Doran hate each other. Okay? So, put aside for the moment all the challenges that would represent. But let's say I know that. They're competitors, whatever it is. And Daniel isn't here. And I'm talking to Josh. And I say, you know, I was in the basement this morning. You should see Daniel learn. He's really learning nicely. Right? So, how is he going to feel? He's either going to feel what?
You're on his side.
What emotions are going to be created that are not healthy? Anger, jealousy, right? Not a smart thing to do. Do you realize the Rambam just took this to a whole different level? Now we're not only talking about what we're saying, we're talking about where we're saying it. You could be saying something that's fine. Right? If I'm sitting here and I say to Duran, you don't really like that shirt. What's praha? That's such an innocent line. But if he hates Duran, and I just said something nice to him about his shirt... Yeah, right. You know? Okay? And he'll go back and sit at lunch. Well, not him. He's an alright boy, but some other Yeshua. He would go back and sit at lunch and he would say, do you see that shirt? Disgusting shirt. And he wouldn't even realize he's doing it sometimes. This is almost superhuman. Very hard to do this, right? That's also avak lashon hara. Sheze gorem lehem shisapur b'kmito. It causes his enemies to want to say negative things about him. Ve'al ze ha'inyan amar Shlomo, mevarech re'eu b'kol gadol b'boker shkem klalat echashev lo. You get up in the morning and you praise your friend with a loud voice, it'll turn into a curse. That's what he's talking about. Shemitoch tovato balidei ato. Just, you know, you're doing something for a person's benefit and turns into a negative, right? Ve'chein, ha'misaper b'lashon hara derech schok v'derech kalut rosh. Now this is interesting. This is not lavak lashon hara. This is the Rambam includes this because it so fits with this topic. But this already is real lashon hara, right? But sometimes you say lashon hara and you don't say it with a negative intent. You don't even realize you're talking lashon hara. You don't say it vindictively. Like if I sit with somebody and say, "Do you see how he drives? I took a drive with this guy. I thought I was going to die. I think he's a menace on the road." Now, let's say he really is a menace on the road. Let's say that it was a terrible thing. That's lashon hara. Agreed?
If it's pekuach nefesh, right? Like, for example, you can... No,
here comes the yetzer hara. Catch it. Watch it.
No, I'm saying that, like, for example, if you know that there's a business that, like, cheats people out, you're allowed to say something negative about that for with the kavana. Right, not to them, but to somebody with a kavana that they shouldn't be cheated through this business. I think it's the same. Isn't it the same thing? If you're talking about the way somebody drives... And like they could crash next time you like if somebody's driving with them.
So here's the question then. Here's the question. How would I know the difference in a case, in that exact case? Did you see this case? A menace on the road. How would I know where that is mutter and where that is not mutter?
No. Trying to be like productive. Like if
what does it start with? What's the question I got to ask?
Purpose.
Why am I saying this? If you're, if it's the last day, if it's the last day, you're gonna owe me an explanation. If it's the last day of Zman, and you're heading off to the Himalayas for a teal, and I'm telling you this about the Chovesh who was with us yesterday, why am I telling you that? Just to tell a good story. That's Lashon Hara. But if I'm telling you this because you're going to a wedding tomorrow night, and you tell me you're going to get a ride with him, and I say to you, listen, I just want you to know that guy was a menace on the road. I scared the heck out of me. Then I could say, listen, I feel responsible to tell you that he drives dangerously. You understand?
Probably.
Now, by the way, that doesn't guarantee that I'm right. Very complicated question whether you can say that. But at least I'm aware that it's a question. At least I'm thinking about it, yeah?
A good example of this is, you know the organization where they said it? When they go to see if a restaurant meets all the standards of paying their workers, and et cetera, they don't say, oh, this restaurant doesn't have it. They'll give them this certificate that they do have it. They're not going to label a restaurant that doesn't have it so that we won't have a negative connotation.
What's this organization?
They go around New York City seeing if the restaurants meet a lot of kosher standards, but also treats their workers properly and fits
right. You have that here also.
Right.
There's two. Pardon?
You're driving. So are you over an Isur? If you say that about him, about him, and you're going to a wedding with him, he's giving you a ride to the wedding, and are you over an Isur halacha of lashon hara?
It depends on the circumstance.
No, in that circumstance.
No, in that circumstance, it depends. It depends why I'm doing it, and
right,
it depends.
You're saying because he's getting a ride with a chavish, and
that's dangerous.
In an instance like that, if I thought that this was a dangerous driver, first of all, this is a separate issue. Separate issue is, I need to give that person tochacha.
So you're over now.
So I need to be telling him that.
So you are?
The driver.
You are then?
No. I'm saying, before you even get to the scenario question, I should be telling that driver. Listen, I was once in a car. I picked up a tram from Efrat. I was driving to Neve Daniel. And I'll tell you, I don't scare easily. I'm not, like, stressed about this stuff. Hashem runs the world. I say, Matil Sederach. Some people drive more safely. Some people drive less. At the end of the day, if you're going to have a car accident, you could have an unsafe driver who has a fine driver, and you could have a safe driver that somebody crosses the divide line. But this guy was an extreme. He was doing two things that drove me nuts. One was he was really speeding, and he went over an unbroken line on a curve and zipped around the guy. Okay, and I'm a Trumpist. And then he started doing it again, and he pulls out his BlackBerry because he got a thing, and he starts texting while he's doing this. Guy must be going like 70 miles an hour, round the curve. You saw the road to Gush Etzion, round the curve on an unbroken line while he's on his BlackBerry. And this is all within 2 minutes of getting in the car, right? So I said, you know what, can you pull over? We got to Neve Daniel, whatever. I said, can you pull over? So he said, huh? I thought you were going to Yerushalayim. I said, I was going to Yerushalayim, and I still am, but I'm getting out of the car here. So he looked at me like, all of a sudden, he looked offended. I said, listen, you have a right to do, whatever you want to do, and Hashem should bless you, and you should have, I'm going to say Tzvil Sederach with a whole different level of Kohen, I'm going to have you in mind, but I'm getting out. He said, no, it's okay. I said, no, I want you to remember that you had a Trumpist, and this Trumpist is going to have a hard time getting to work today, because you're driving like a maniac. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't know you, I don't hold anything against you, I respect you, and I love you, and I care about you, and I think the fact that you, I think the fact that a Trumpist actually got out of the car is going to give you pause for thought. And what I ask of you is that after I get out of the car, please let me off. Take the rest of the time in the way to Yerushalayim to think about this. Because if I save you from a car accident, it'll make my day. That's all. I got out of the car. I got out of the car. The guy was nuts. I want to get to work. I want to get to the car. You have a shmartim al nafshotechem. I don't know if he became a negative driver. He wasn't angry at me. It's fine. Machpatli.
I mean, if
are you in that circumstance, are you an over an answer? You have a chavish going to a wedding. You're getting right with him.
Well, I guess that's a larger question. But if I knew this guy and I knew that somebody was going to, if my daughter was going to go catch a ride with the guy, I'd tell her I don't want you driving that guy. Get another ride.
But if you said he's a menace,
and then
you conclude with your sentence.
Right, but again, what's the purpose? Am I trying to help this guy become a better driver? Am I trying to stop someone from getting a ride because I care about them? That's at least a valid purpose.
Your purpose is to make sure the person doesn't get is not in danger.
So in that circumstance,
it's okay to say
that? Yeah. I think so, yeah.
I mean, what if somebody's purpose is just kind of like not to save people or whatever, like not to protect them from something, but like more of like just so that they know. I mean, I'll give an example. Let's say I'm trying to get a ride from school. There's two or three different rides I can get, I know that there is one guy who somebody once told me, like, oh, he's a maniac on the road, and I won't get into his car because I've actually, like, seen him drive, and he's pretty crazy when he drives. So, like, I purposely don't get into the car. Now,
right.
That person originally told me that he drives crazy.
Did you a favor?
Did me a favor, but I don't think it was... He was saying it so that I won't get into the car necessarily.
Then he might have been over on Lashnar. Absolutely.
Helped a good purpose.
Listen, I'm not saying no good. What's dangerous about Lashon Hara is that there are good things that come out of it also.
Right.
It's still Usher. You know what I mean? And that balance is a very delicate balance. Look, it's like, imagine we're having a class on kashrut, and you say, well, can you put cold cheese into a hot meat pot that was just cooked with meat? And I say, no. You say, well, what if, and we start to get into it. At a certain point, I say, listen, this is complicated questions. When you ask a question, you have to ask a posek. Well, people don't realize, you need a posek for the laws of Lashon Hara also. Circumstances can be very complicated. So the Rambam is just giving you the basics.
Right, I mean, like in the case that you just gave, like if you know somebody who's about to get in the car with that person to go, let's say, wedding, whatever, then like you can tell them and that's fine. But like somebody who kind of says it out loud, also to protect people, saying like, you know what, in the future, don't take a ride from this person. I mean, can you say something like that? You know that they're not taking a ride from them now, and you don't know if they'll ever take a ride from them in the future. But like you can say something like that too. I mean, it seems kind of like.
If you believe that you're doing it to protect people, then yeah, then that's Lashon Hara that's permitted. Right? That's by the way, Feirush and the Tzara Shonka. Let's just finish this halacha. And so the Rambam says, when you tell Lashon Hara, but you're doing it as a kidding around, you don't mean it like negatively, but it's still Lashon Hara, then it's still Lashon Hara. You know? Like we're all sitting at the table, and we're talking about, you know, we're kidding. And you say to one of the guys, like, we're talking about driving. I went to driving school, you know, Benny Friedman's son is driving, whatever it is. Say, yeah, well, you know, I heard Benny's dad talk about him. You know, he learned to drive in like, tag schools. So be careful with him. Everybody laughs, right? So that's avak lashon hara. Because you don't mean it menacingly. It's like you're kidding around. But you're still saying something that leads people to say something negative. Right? So it's avak lashon hara. Okay? V'chein. Ha-mesaper lashon hara derech rama'ut. Sometimes you say something, you know it's really negative, but you pretend like you didn't know. Like sachekota. Like somebody says Lashon Hara, I say, really? Right? That's just as much of an issue as Lashon Hara. Right? And you only, and then when somebody comes and says, you know, you shouldn't do that, it's Lashon Hara. Omer, eini yodea shedavar zeh Lashon Hara. I had no idea. Or let's say you're talking about someone. I don't know, what would be a good example? Say, well, you know, there was a guy, and he was with us in Tzfat, and he had his son with him. And he gave a shiur and went on and on and on and on. But you didn't talk about who it was. But everybody knows that there's only one guy there who brought his son, right? So then you say, oh, I didn't realize that you figured out, right? That's Lashon Hara too. In the Beirav, in a different world. So that's also Avak Lashon Hara. You have to be careful about these things. We have to stop. Omer, ini yodesh devar Lashon Hara, o she'elu ma'asav shalponi. I didn't know that these were the actions of this particular individual. So Lashon Hara becomes a very complex weave, and you have to really sort of consider when you start to speak whether you have spoken things that could negatively damage another person.
What these things are. Mm-hmm.
Guys, before you go, three important announcements, please. Okay? John, guys, before you go, before everybody disappears, three important